The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for the final Film Study offense review of the year. Unfortunately, it's not a happy one, as most final results are not unless you win the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about the offense with Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. You know, could be doing better. Obviously, really disappointing to see what the offense was able to produce on against the Bills, but ultimately just couldn't get a grip on the ball. And, you know, it's funny that we talk about a lot of complex things when it comes to football scheme. You know, I love to bring out the analytics, but at the end of the day, if you can't hold on to the football, you're not going to win the game. And it stinks when it comes down to those very, very simple things. But that seemed to be the theme on Sunday.
If you ever thought, and I've probably watched that 2000 Tennessee game a number of times where Tennessee really did a much better job moving the football, certainly than the Ravens did in that game. And you thought how a Tennessee fan must feel. This is how a Ravens fan feels today. I mean, it's a game where the Ravens completely dominated the Bills. They had the mistake-free game versus the Steelers where they were thoroughly dominant both halves. They dominated again offensively, but they had three turnovers, two missed two-point conversions that cost them the game. They did a lot of things right in this game, but they didn't do the most important things right, unfortunately. And I think you've hit on some of that. There were a lot of questions have already come up about the offensive game plan that I'm fairly dismissive of, but I'm willing to consider another viewpoint here. One of the questions, somebody with a microphone stuck in Harbaugh's face or was what asked of Harbaugh is, are you concerned that Henry had only 16 carries in this game?
Yeah, I think, I don't think that's the smartest question to ask John Harbaugh right after the game. I don't know what you're going to get out of him in that situation when he hasn't even had time to go back and look at much of anything. And then obviously situationally, the Ravens put themselves in a position where they had to pass the ball a lot in the second half. I did think they did a good job staying with the run throughout the first half and even into the third quarter. You know, not abandoning the run was something that was, you know, key to that for them going into the game because they still have that ability to create consistent and explosive, efficient and explosive gains on the ground. But they obviously had to start throwing the ball toward later and later in the game. That brings on Justice Hill. That takes away the number of carries you're going to have. So I don't really have an issue with it. I think if you look only at box score to determine the validity of the game plan, I think you're going to miss a lot of the important context.
And if you look at box score, I don't know how you'd come up with anything, but this is a very valid game plan. They ran the ball 30 times. They passed it 27. What more balance do you want? You have to threaten, pass, and run all the time to maximize your offense in theory. The Ravens didn't have the lead, so they weren't taking increased win percentage, decreased expected points opportunities to run the ball at the end of the game. So it's not a game script thing, was not favoring you to run Henry a lot. They ran effectively in that third quarter. That was great. And the only time where I thought maybe we could have seen a couple more runs was on the final drive where they scored way too quickly. This is an under presented point, but the Ravens scored with what, a minute and 44 or something left to go in the game. And they scored on two plays from the 43-yard line, I think it was, because a 19-yard gain to Andrews was immediately preceded the 24-yard touchdown. They really needed to slow that game down at that point. They changed their chance from if they had gotten the two-point conversion. So assume they get the two-point conversion, which is, you know, they're not guaranteed to, but it's the only situation that really matters at that point. Their chance to win the game is realistically 50% if you end the game with zero time on the clock. And maybe underneath 15 seconds, I'd say it's the same thing. Underneath 30 seconds, it's a smidge lower, but it's still pretty good. But you give Josh Allen and the Bills offense a minute and 44 and two timeouts, they are probably getting in field goal range. And yes, it was a lot of risk.
Yeah, so I think you bring up, and I think this is the beauty of football, this is how complicated the thinking can get. When the Ravens started that drive, there was more than 2 minutes on the clock, and you kind of have to decide very early in that drive how are you going to use your timeouts, and are you going to go for two possessions, or are you going to go for the tie? They clearly made the decision to go for the tie. Totally fine, instead of trying to rush downfield and risk another turnover, risk just not just even to be clear, getting the first score.
There was no two-possession opportunity. They had one timeout left, so there was no two-possession opportunity present to the Ravens. As soon as you're down to only two timeouts, you know, that's a minute and 30, minute and 45, really. They can run off the clock without question.
Yeah, I forgot exactly how much time they had when they got the ball. But I think you could look at it as we're going to try and, score really quickly and get the onside kick and give ourselves a better chance of winning the game that way. I think they made the right decision because I think, you know, I don't know exactly what there's probably a data point in there somewhere, but I don't know exactly what the break-even point when you get down to having the ball with X number of timeouts. So in that situation, they wanted to go quickly to get down the field. And then you bring in the fact that you're going to give the balls back. And this was on my mind.
Hold on a second, Nick. Let me make sure that we're talking apples and apples here, okay? You think they made the right decision to score more quickly or to not try and delay the score in some way?
No, sorry. I think they recognized early what you just pointed out, which is they did not have enough time to score super quickly. Although, you know, they got the ball with 3 minutes and 23 seconds left. Yeah. So you could take a big risk and try and really push the ball downfield and score as fast as possible. In which case, A, you're giving the Bills ball back. I don't think that it makes sense to go for two possessions, like you said. So they made the decision that we're only going to get the one possession. But once you make that decision, you have to take into account what you were just saying, which is that the Bills are going to get the ball back and they have two timeouts. So it's tough, you know, to tell Lamar, don't pass the ball to an open guy in the end zone, right? So it goes back to what you're saying about having some more runs in there. I do think it's risky. I do think it's risky to, at that point in the game, try and score slower. But you could try you could try it a little bit harder. I mean, you don't have to, I don't know. I think that they scored with a minute 44 left from 24 yards out. Before that, they had a big play right before that to Mark Andrews. Actually, they were at the Buffalo 43. So if you're looking at the Ravens, you get down to the 24, then I think that's where you start thinking about some runs and running out a little bit of the clock, knowing that your run game is still effective. Your run game is still working.
They had two things that went on there. They had two run out of bounds plays, Andrews and Hill consecutively before that took him to the 24. The play by Hill, he ran out of bounds. I was yelling from my seat, stay the fuck in bounds. It was really that simple. I mean, it really was. And the situation is really worse than that because while you have Allen in a three down in his own end of the field situation, which is what they had against Burrow with the tie, by the way, during the regular season in the game at Cincinnati, you might get a sack and you might force them to kill the ball, which basically they did in the regular season, and they were not put in the position to do in this game. the Ravens, their only chance here, and literally their chance to win the game probably went from 50 to 20 by time left on the clock. Because I think Allen is about 60%, maybe more. I'm probably being conservative with that, to get in field goal range within a minute and 44 with two timeouts. You got to make the field goal.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it's hard to imagine Allen making that drive down the field. You know, the defense had played quite well, I would say, in the second half especially. Yeah. But this was also a game where the Bills were not dropping back very much. I forget exactly how many passes Allen threw. Only 22 passing attempts, 23 total dropbacks. So not a super pass-heavy game plan for them. Only 5.8 yards per attempt. They were very willing to take the underneath plays early
all
on.
Short, yep.
Right. So I think, you know, I think I get the calculus in John Harbaugh's mind, which is, you know, our defense has been so good in the second half. And it is, I do think, Ken, that we're not necessarily appreciating how hard it is to not score. And I don't mean in terms of like the will of the players. I just mean in terms of coordinating your offense. And you're in that situation with a time crunch, you're running out of timeouts. You can, I think the plays that you mentioned where they stay in bounds, I think that's your opportunity to chew more of the clock. But I think taking that into account too much in the play calling, I think that's too risky, in my opinion.
Here's what I say. Listen, you're into the stats. You understand analytics, and you can get this. So you're one of the people I can actually have a meaningful discussion about this with, Nick. So the thing I'm going to tell you is, going from 50 to 20 has to play into the calculus. You have to understand what you're doing. That it's really the only coaching objection I have in this game. I think the coaching game plan was marvelous. They completely dominated the Bills, and you can't tell Linderbaum not to miss snap the ball. You can't really tell Lamar not to fumble it. You can't have Lamar make a bad read on the safety or not look the safety off, whichever it was, and throw the bad interception. And you can't tell Andrews, you know, not to fumble a football. You can just hope he doesn't. That's your limit as a coach.
100%.
But what you can is, you know, the risk of scoring early, the point I'm trying to make is so great relative to their remaining chance to win the game. You only had at most a 50% chance to win the game, and you gave away 60% of that, or maybe a little more, by scoring too early. It's that simple. And yes, there's risk, but I might take if your chance to score from wherever was 60% for the Ravens, let's say from the 43-yard line, I'd reduce that by 20-25% with a couple of runs. I don't even think it would really reduce it by that much to throw in a couple of run plays.
Yeah, I think in an ideal situation, right, you can get into a goal to go situation with the clock moving and maybe force the Bills to take a timeout or two. You know, again, we, as far as like on field decision making, I don't think anyone's going to tell Lamar Jackson not to hit Isaiah Likely in the end zone in the middle of the play. So it goes back to, you know, what is your objective? And I do think that this is another instance of you gotta score, and not necessarily thinking about the ramifications of, well, okay, if all this goes in our favor, what position are we leaving ourselves in, to your point? So again, I think it's hard to scheme that out on a play-by-play basis as the coordinator. I mean, Monken is very good. I'm sure that, you know, if tasked with it, he could come up with it. But I think that is where, you know, you call a run or two, but I think the risk of a run, you get stuffed. The risk of, you know, I think at this point in the game, if I'm the Bills, I'm staying on top of Derrick Henry for an extra few seconds. I'm salting every bit of the clock, even backed up
good
inside my I think if it's an instance where, you know, if the game comes down to the Ravens offense against the Bills defense, that's the position that you want to put yourselves in. Maybe now that I'm thinking of it, I think that might be the most fundamental point to my thinking of this situation is, if the game came down to it, you're putting it Bills offense versus Ravens defense instead of a situation where it's Ravens offense versus Bills defense, where I just think you have a clear advantage. You know, they struggle.
Wait a minute. Let's talk about these two. I don't want to beat this thing to death. I really don't. But I would say the bigger advantage in this game was Ravens offense versus Bills defense.
Yes.
Based on the different. Okay, so we're in agreement that the Ravens offense versus the Bills defense is where you want the game decided.
Yes, I think my only gripe with what you're saying is that it's hard to not score. I know it seems like I think the opportunities we talk about with the Henry or with Hill and Andrews going down in bounds would have been a good, you know, situation where they could salt time off the clock. But, you know, I still think that then coordinating a, you know, 25 yards and X number of plays, if something goes wrong, I think you're tightening your margins of error to get in the end zone. So, I, you know, again, I don't know exactly how I would dial that up, because I think you're absolutely right in terms of wanting to score slower. But you can't not still threaten the deep parts of the field. As part of your game plan.
And got no problem also with taking a knee, if that's what it comes down to. And certainly not taking a knee inside the, you know, the 2 yard line. If you want to try and make your play from in there. But my issue is, you've got risk in every direction. And if you don't mind, if you're going to reduce your chance of scoring a touchdown, you have to reduce your chance of scoring a touchdown by 60% to reduce your chance of winning the game. And that just doesn't make any sense. I can't make that work. So there's got to be somebody, some sharp pencil in the Ravens organization, basically it's on the headset and saying, we need to slow this down and make sure we score in the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think also being on the 24 yard line, you're right on the cusp of where you can start to maneuver in a more methodical, slower manner. Again, I think if they're inside the 20, I think they probably go the direction that you're talking, and run the ball and salt the clock a little bit more. But from the 24 yard line, you're just trying to get down into the red zone. You're trying to get into a goal to go situation, and that it's going to happen when, I mean, Jackson was, I don't know how much time Jackson had to throw on that play, but he had a good amount of time to throw on that play. And so at a certain point, especially, you know, with Jackson's ability to consistently create extended plays, the risk, as weird as it sounds, the risk of scoring too early is almost amplified because of his ability to, you know, pick up explosive gains through the air when he holds the ball in for a while. So,
and what tonic is there for that?
Exactly. Like I said, you're not going to tell him not to throw the ball downfield. The only option you have is, like you said, run the ball a little bit more. I think that would have been maybe an opportunity to bring out some designed reads from that distance. And then maybe once you get down into the, you know, maybe your goal should be working into the within the 20, within the 15 or the 10 from that 24 yard line. And then you can really start to slow it down from there.
Here's my objection to that. Okay. That's too late. When you get down to the side of the 20 yard line, it's literally too late. I mean, the Bills, you know, presumably could immediately create a play where you're at first and goal, call their timeout, and then force you to work it down from there. You won't get the clock under a minute probably before you feel the need to score on second put down, probably, and not third. It does not provide that. The 40 yard line or the 43 yard line, that was the place to start running the football, because they had or stay in bounds on either the Hill play or the Andrews pass, either one of those. It's too late to be at the 24 yard line and then start with a minute and 44 there with the Bills having still two timeouts. It is too damn late to try and bleed out the clock from there. And we've seen so many times the Ravens have tried to bleed 2 minutes off the clock against a team under those circumstances with two timeouts. And another possession is coming for the other team.
Yeah, I think it's also a sense of, you know, you're in the playoffs, you've had this rough game. I think that the mental strain comes in there, and the stress of, okay, we've made all these mistakes. You know, there's you hope no one on the offense is thinking precisely this, but the longer we're out here, the more plays we run, the more chance there is that we make a mistake and in the game. You know, like I said, the defense has been playing well in the second half. I think it's the kind of decision where you are in trouble if you're obviously, worst case situation is you don't score. Best case situation is you score with no time left on the clock. It's just a matter of finding the best outcome between those two spectrums. And they were headed towards the one that was way too close to the worst case scenario. If you start running the ball from the 43, at least, you know, you force the Bills to call their timeouts. But if I'm the Bills and you're running the ball from the 43, I might let you and see if I can get you to get in a situation where your offense is having to hurry up inside the 10 and get in the end zone. And I can maybe hold on to your running back for a few extra seconds. I think it is one of the tougher situations. Now that we're talking about this, it is one of the tougher situations to to strategize and then play call for. I think that the desperation probably, that was the word I was probably searching for earlier. I think the desperation probably set in just a little bit, and that is going to affect your decision making in a negative way.
All right. Well, enough said. There's a lot of people who can't accept any argument except you got to score because you got to score. If you don't score, you can't win the game. Blah, blah, blah. It's just there is a risk with every path taken in life. And the risk of scoring with 1:44 to go, they didn't convert the 2-point conversion. So it didn't, that path didn't come to fruition, but it was very great. The risk there was very great of losing that game. They probably had maybe a 20% chance to win the game, even if they had made the 2-point conversion.
Yeah. And I think you talk about the 2-point conversion, you know, in terms of the offensive game plan, I think everything except for those short yardage situations near the goal line, they excelled in. They moved the ball against the Bills almost at will. I think, you know, there was very much a clear intention to stick with the run that they stuck to, even going down two possessions. It's a tough thing to do to stick to the run after going down two possessions, but they did that. That is what helped them get back into the game and be in the position they were at the end of the game. But those the missed 2-point conversion and not scoring a touchdown when you were at the three are probably the two things coaching wise that stand out to me offensively from this game.
All right, let's move on since we got a lot to talk about here. I think this was a game where Lamar and the offense had another great game without having Flowers. Kind of makes the Deontay Johnson acquisition look all the worse that you pay for an insurance policy there. Obviously, it didn't pay off. They didn't get Deontay Hardy activated either for this game, which kind of surprised me that he didn't make it back.
It wasn't really surprising to me because of just the simple fact they would have had to create a roster spot. I know that there are obviously players that they deactivated for the game that they could have used to make that roster spot and then figured it out over the course of the next week.
They elevated Miller for the game. So it would have been, they had room there, and probably the guy who would not have played would be Sims.
I think they would have had to make a corresponding 53 move too, which I think they certainly could have done. I just think that Hardy didn't show them what they were really expecting from him. I think as a returner in training camp, I don't think Hardy was really part of the offense at all. He rarely, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Ken, but I feel like in training camp, he was rarely a part of, you know, he was injured for part of it. He was dealing with personal things for part of it. But when he was there, I didn't feel like he was, you know, even a third team receiver when they were doing offensive drills and offensive installs. And so I think a guy like, you know, Miller and Sims, I wasn't surprised to see them active over him just as more familiar members of the offense. Weirdly, even though Hardy's been there the whole season, Sims had been practicing and then even getting game reps in the last couple of weeks. It was quite something to see Steven Sims and Anthony Miller getting key playoff snaps and key playoff plays, actually opportunities. It kind of makes you think about, you know, when the Ravens had this motley crew of receivers in the early Lamar years, except these guys were making their plays. I honestly didn't come in worrying about, oh my gosh, are we going to hand the ball off to Steven Sims or Anthony Miller? But I felt like when their number was called, they delivered. Like you're saying, you know, how much more would Deontay Johnson have done? You know, in theory, he's a more talented player. We talked a lot about him. I think the last time I was here, I came to the conclusion that, you know, he's probably fairly overrated by one season in his career. So, I just still laugh about Anthony Miller and Steven Sims' crucial snaps in the playoffs for this Ravens team. But okay. They didn't need help with special teams.
Let me go back to the Hardy thing. The only thing I'm pointing out with the Hardy thing is that they had a player who could have been activated and they didn't use him. And so they had the wide receiver resources within the team and able to get through that. It just makes the Deontay Johnson trade look that worse, you know, in terms of going after him. The Flowers injury seemed extremely serious at the time. A lot of people poo-pooed it. I do think it affects how the other teams use their resources, but I don't think it was a be-all end-all. I think the Ravens showed in these two playoff games they were still very effective offensively without him.
Yeah, I think predictably it was overblown. Obviously, Zay is a great player, had a great season, but especially in the matchups that were upcoming for the Ravens, you know, he wasn't he was never going to be the linchpin of their offensive attack against the Steelers or the Bills. And so, you know, I think it also speaks to Monken's ability to change gears when he needs to go into the heavy personnel, rely on his tight ends and again, I know I keep mentioning, but find ways to get random players like Anthony Miller and Stephen Sims involved who are, you know, in easier matchups because Bills aren't expecting them to do much.
They did a great job of that. And I don't think it was all the called plays. I think it was a lot of Lamar finding people, particularly on extended plays. But if you look at that last drive and the big touchdown drive before the half against Pittsburgh, it's, you know, five different receivers on five plays this week on the touchdown drives. It's six on six plays last week against the Steelers. So it's been remarkable. Let's move on a little bit. Solid offensive line performance. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I think it was a lot product of the conditions on the field that they were able to move the ball. And that's definitely true of Buffalo. Buffalo went very heavy, and they got a lot of combination blocks that are very effective, a lot of moving to level two. Any pang of regret that the Ravens didn't run the ball more, given how successful both their run and pass game were, or are you good with it?
I think if you look at like when the turnovers occurred on the drives, that's a time when you know, you're not going to be able to get to run any more plays on that drive. Turnovers occurred on a pass play. So I think that plays into the ultimate numbers that you see in the box score. Right. No ultimate gripe for me. That was the game plan. And I think a lot of people reference that as being the game plan just in terms of week four. I think that is not why it was the game plan. I think it was the game plan because that's who the Ravens are. That's the kind of team that they are. That's their identity. The conditions, I think, were advantageous to a rushing attack. It is obviously in those conditions, it's easier to get push on the O-line, make defenders miss, and you know, also be physical, make it hurt, be physical for 90 minutes or for 60 minutes. You know, hopefully should have been 75 minutes, but
some 60 plus minutes.
Yeah, 60 plus minutes. You know, I think the Bills threw a lot of blitzes. They were run blitzing a lot, and the Ravens didn't back down from that. They didn't back down from run blitzes or load boxes. They've been one of the best teams against running into load boxes in the NFL this year. And you know, again, didn't back down when the Bills came out trying to stop the run early on.
They did have some problems running the ball. Obviously, they had a very much a feaster. Looking at the offensive line tonight, they had a very much feaster famine results in terms of their run game. A lot of minus ones. A fair number of penetrations in the game charged the offensive line, and that they had also, you know, plenty of good plays. Didn't have the one really great breakaway run. Henry was like a ankle tackle away from one, but that was kind of unfortunate. I did like the fight the Ravens had in the second half. They've had that in general in the playoffs with Lamar in the 2018 game against San Diego. A lot of people, you know, have blanked that one out of their mind, but they had a great comeback in the second half. As crappy a first half as they played, it really was a great comeback. And then 2020 against Tennessee, they were down 10-0 in that game, came back and knocked him out, you know, with the rest of that game.
Even Houston last year, the feeling of the Texans really bringing it to the Ravens in the first half and not bowing to that, sticking with your identity, coming out a lot of, you know, quarterback runs designed for Jackson in that second half. Again, a good team that is that like the Ravens that works really hard to establish an identity can't go away from it. And I felt like that was a crucial part. It was the only reason they stayed in this game. I felt like was they stuck with their identity, and with that identity, not just the schematic and game planning, but also the mentality. I think you keep your players focused on this is who we are. We've been this team all year and we can execute it. And I think that is also an element of the fight that you're talking about. It's not just a matter of, you know, oh, we got to keep calling the same plays. It's, hey, we're sticking to what we do best and we are going to do it better than they are. And ultimately in that game, the Ravens offense was better than the Bills defense other than holding on to the football.
One of the other complaints about the Ravens in this game was that they didn't play heavy enough, that they'd gone to the sixth offensive lineman more. They saw the Bills succeed with it. I think the answer on that is pretty simple. I think that they got the matchups they wanted with 22, 21, and 12. Those three sets, they didn't feel the need to go to six offensive linemen very often. And they did seven once and six three other times. That's how they did it. But point being that they got Teron Johnson off the field for a huge number of snaps. He's their slot corner, and he's a very tough defender, and he even had big plays in this game. And they got Matt Milano off the game for off the field for eight plays. Another guy who's hurt the Ravens, and again hurt the Ravens in this game with the deflected 2-point conversion.
Yeah, and I think that is I think it, like you said, it's about getting the personnel that you want. They got the looks they wanted without having to go even heavier. You know, there is an advantage, run block advantage, to bring that sixth offensive lineman, but then obviously you give up a potential target in the pass game. And again, game script. The game script impacts your ability to go heavy and bring in and do all of the things that you want to do in terms of six offensive linemen and controlling the clock in the first half. Those are things that were just taken off the table fairly quickly in that game.
Yep. All right. Todd Monken has two scheduled interviews. Tag us with a percentage chance that he is not the Ravens offensive coordinator in 2025.
Yeah, I forget his interviews remaining. Obviously, the Bears going with Ben Johnson was one of the interviews that Monken scheduled for. I think he interviewed with the Jaguars. I think I'd seen his name tossed around with the Jets, but they're clearly pretty locked in on Aaron Glenn at this point. I think there's a high percentage he stays. I think, God, if I had to say a percentage, he's the Ravens OC next year, I'd say 75% plus. I feel pretty optimistic. I'm not sure that Monken would go into a situation like Jacksonville. Again, head coaching opportunities don't come around that often, which is important to preface any conversation like this with, because I think there's a lot of talk about situation and wanting to end up in a good spot. But Munkin's on the older side. He's had his head coach shot. He was an interim head coach, I believe, briefly, if I remember correctly. Has never really gotten his shot as, you know, the head coach. So it would be hard for him to turn down the head coaching gig in Jacksonville if offered. But I do worry about his fit with Trent Baalke and the Jaguars' insistence on staying with him as general manager. I don't want to get too into the weeds on all the coaching stuff, on all the coaching carousel. But ultimately, I don't think Monken ends up getting offered that job.
90% he stays with the Ravens. I think if he did go to the Jags, it's actually a pretty good job because he gets to turn around a struggling quarterback. Mm-hmm. That might be a good opportunity for him, but I think it's 90% he stays. Not a dynasty coach. So let's talk about the Ravens in terms of supplementing and changing the coaching talent they have this year for 2025. Where do you think their focus will be? I guess we'll start with just a yes or no or very pithy answer on this. Harbaugh, a 3-year extension likely this offseason with his last year being 25, or do you think something else?
I think it's likely. I think fans are doing the same song and dance about calling for him to be fired after playoff loss. I just don't think that's likely or wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely. So they've got a number of other offensive positions in particular where I think there's an opportunity to rebuild a coaching tree that eventually bear fruit in future head coaches for other teams. How do you start to build that? And I'll toss out the first one. I think they probably need a young offensive line coach to at least be no worse than a year in waiting under Warhop to be the guy.
Yes, I think that is priority number one. It was obviously a huge blow to lose Joe D'Alessandro. It's not just, you know, to the offensive line, but to the whole team. He was a beloved guy in the facility. Mm-hmm. They brought in George Warhop, their assistant offensive line coach, whose name I'm blanking on right now. Travell Wharton is good, but the fact that he didn't immediately get promoted to head offensive line coach when Joe passed away is a sign that the Ravens thought he wasn't ready. Now, do they think he's ready after a season, one season under Warhop? Would they make that move? I'm not sure. I don't know enough about Wharton to say. But I do think that, you know, Warhop is on the older side as well. And I think that's something they need to think about. You talk about the offensive line getting younger, but I also think you could talk about the offensive line coach getting younger now that you have, you know, unfortunately, but, you are in the position where you have to find a new one for the long term.
I think the fact that he didn't get the job right away does kind of speak volumes, which is unfortunate. And also I'd love to have an offensive line coach that was just an offensive line coach and wanted to do that for 20 years with the Ravens. Probably not realistic. So, you know, you probably end up with a Greg Roman type who maybe don't know early on Greg Roman that he wants to be a head coach, but he's going to get that opportunity at some point. And just when it happens, it happens. It's part of the problem of hiring great people is you eventually lose them. So it's one of the
hallmarks of Harbaugh's recent tenure, especially has been how well they've hired. It's not necessarily surprising, given how Steve Bisciotti made all the money that he used to buy the Ravens. But I think you look at the rest of their offensive coaching staff. T. Martin is a name I think that's going to pop up for OCs, for OC spots. Maybe not this. It hasn't popped up too much this offseason, but I think he will get.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
More attention for it next offseason. So I think getting an assistant quarterbacks coach, right now it's Daniel Stern. He's also the director of football strategy. I think getting another quarterbacks coach, unless you have designs to make Stern the head quarterbacks coach once Martin leaves, I think that's something that you want to plan for this offseason too, is the potential for T. Martin to leave.
I think the quarterbacks coach situation that they've had has been very much a relationship position with Lamar. And I think they've done a good job with having Urban there before. Not Urban. Wait, was it Urban?
Yeah.
James Urban. James Urban, right? I always think I'm talking about Brent Urban and Greg Roman. Sometimes I get that, but it is Urban. So anyway, I thought, you know, he had a great relationship with him, you see the some of the kind of salty relationships that Flacco had with various OCs towards the end of his Ravens tenure, particularly with Cam Cameron. I mean, just by 2012, when Cameron was fired midseason, had a very salty relationship with him. It's just important to have a guy who knows that basically Lamar Jackson is way up here. You have to be a supportive person, and you can't redirect everything he does. He's still going to say, I'm just playing ball, coach, when he comes off the field a lot. And you can't completely redirect him.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, again, I don't know much about Stern. I don't know what kind of relationship he has with Jackson. But just looking at his role in the Ravens, you know, kind of situational strategy, I think it would be hard to do that and be the head quarterback's coach, ultimately. Elsewhere on the offensive line, I don't know how much I would change. I think really Taggart did an excellent job incorporating Derrick Henry into the attack this year. Henry has been very vocal about his praise of Taggart and assimilating him into the shotgun pistol looks that the Ravens like to use to get Lamar Jackson as a running threat as well. I thought he did a great job assimilating Henry into the offense. Wide receivers coach, Greg Lewis, I think, like we talked about earlier, I think Lewis does a great job getting his guys ready for the situation they're in. He's never handed buckets of premium talent, although I think we can agree that, Flowers and Bateman are two very, very good, very good foundational pieces for this offense moving forward. But I think, the work that he did to get guys like Miller and Sims, Tylan Wallace had an excellent season. He is also a bit on the older side. But I don't see him moving on this offseason.
All right. There will be some tough cuts, by the way, some tough decisions made about players. But the Ravens have never had a problem bringing in additional people with creative titles to take on roles. The run game coordinator and, tight ends coach. And I think Roman held both those titles before he became offensive coordinator. There's always room for more people with a different title and a slightly different focus on things, but ultimately got to grow your tree. One of the things the Ravens are a team that's this concerned about comp picks is also going to be concerned about is minority hiring and aggressively pursuing high quality young African-American coaches, young minority coaches. It could be anything, obviously, but African-American is obviously the most likely of the group we're talking about there.
Yeah, I think that's why when Monken was talked about for head coaching jobs, the first thought for OC was Martin, because you could then see a path for Barton getting a head coaching opportunity in a couple of years elsewhere. I think that's something the Ravens are, it'll never be, it will never be and should never be necessarily the reason that you go a certain direction. But I think it's something that a team that's as savvy as the Ravens is going to keep in mind when, like you just said, you can mix and match and move around titles as you want to put guys in positions to get coordinator jobs elsewhere and get you a comp pick.
Right. Well, when it's close, you get the guy, you will end up giving you a comp pick. And I just think that has to be the way of it, honestly. If the rules of, give me any rule set, I can play by it and I can maximize what the Ravens can get out of this is probably the Ravens' way of thinking this.
There's no gaming that system either. If the coach has got to be a good enough coach to earn the coordinator or head coaching job somewhere else, then he's going to be good enough to, do a good job on your team.
Okay. Usually your point of entry is going to be at a lower point than the coordinator role though. So hiring outstanding minority coaches who have excellent leadership skills in particular. Like the recent example, it's just prime number one, Anthony Weaver. Fantastic, obviously going to be a head coach someday when he's defensive line coach. He's very relatable to the players, ex-player in recent times, all of that, just extremely obvious that he'll be a head coach in the National Football League. Having as many guys in secondary roles, a positional coaching role or a special assistant role or whatever it might be, your point of entry is typically before they become coordinator. And that's where you got to be looking ahead to. Is this guy the next Mike Tomlin? Is this guy another guy who's going to really lead men?
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly what they've done so well on the defensive side of the ball over the years. And now I think, like you're saying, the focus should be on the offensive side of the ball for Harbaugh and, Monken by extension to start building history.
All right, so let's talk a little more generally about the Ravens offense here. The Bills missed 8 tackles in this game and the Ravens 6, and this is using the PFF totals, which are generally pretty tough on defenses in terms of racking up more missed tackles. But this is the Ravens' DNA, is to force missed tackles. One of the kind of disappointing things in this game was that Henry only forced 1 missed tackle on 16 runs. And of course, he was 1 ankle tackle away from breaking a touchdown run. The Ravens end up scoring anyway, but it was unfortunate that he didn't break it there.
Yeah. And I think, again, part of that is the way the Bills strategized to stop the Ravens run game. It felt like the Ravens weren't getting many clean plays. I'd be curious to go double check what the yards before and after contact statistics were. But the Ravens Henry wasn't getting as many one-on-one opportunities to force a missed tackle. Usually he was maybe making a guy start to miss and another Bills defender would come up and finish the play. I felt like it was a lot of those situations. And that was very, you know, very much the intent from the Bills from the get-go was, you know, swarm Henry, gang tackle him, and don't let him get in a position where you are the only person between him and the end zone, because that is the last position that any defender wants to be in.
Okay, so providing a little bit of data there, 2.75 yards after contact per attempt for Henry, 383 for Justice Hill. That's a great number. And this is the great one, 633 for Jackson, who forced two missed tackles. He'll force three of them. The receivers didn't force a single. No, they might have forced two missed tackles. I got to actually look at that because I only see six from the rushers. They had to be two from the receivers. Just flipping over the receiver side, though, I do want to talk about this a little bit. The Ravens only had 79 yak in this game. Now, that's not it's not necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, but Lamar was really throwing accurately down the field, had a 9.0 completion average yards. It's very high. Only nine, I think it was 9.5 or 9.7 was his overall intended air yards. So the completed air yards were at 9.0. Mm-hmm. But to have 31% of your receiving yards, yak, is very low for a game. Their average for the whole season was right around 50%.
Yeah, and I think if you wanted to look at a spot where maybe you're missing Zay Flowers, there is his ability to force missed tackles after the catch, to be a schemed yak generator as well, something that they just really don't dial up for other players quite as much. I think that's maybe the one area you could look at where the Ravens were missing Flowers. But again, if you look at the grand scheme of the game, it didn't end up mattering. Part of the, you know, yak thing is because, like you said, of how deep Jackson was tending to look downfield. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is an area of missed opportunity. There were extra opportunities that they ultimately missed. I'm trying to replay some of the catches in my mind. Unfortunately, a lot of it is the really bad plays, like Andrews, where he's trying to pick up the extra yak and ends up turning himself into a fumble.
Two long plays to Bateman were, you know, caught at the like three and caught in the end zone. So those two weren't an opportunity for yak. I look at it, I say, this is really more about Lamar completing deep passes and having a very high quality of his completed passes than about low quality of yak. But there were some yards, no doubt, left on the field in terms of, I'll tell you, the big missed yak opportunity was on the Henry drop.
Yep.
Because that would have been 45, 50 yards, I think, on that play.
And that was a ball that was just underthrown by Lamar that Henry should still be catching. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of play you could tell Lamar was frustrated with leaving that ball short and making Henry slow down and catch it. It kind of looked like Henry was gathering to run just a little bit too early. I think there was a play against the Chiefs very early in the season. I don't know if it was against the Chiefs or another team where Henry dropped a pretty clear opportunity for a catch. And I had been very, very good. I felt like as a receiver, pretty honestly underrated as a receiver, considering Hill's kind of outsized role in the passing game throughout the season. And then just to have him drop that with, you know, miles and miles of green, or I guess at that point, white grass in front of him. That's another play that you look at the end of the game. And I think Tony Romo said it on the broadcast. And at the time, I kind of rolled my eyes at him saying, oh, you're going to look back at that play as a, That play is a big play in this game. But right there, it was an opportunity for you to pick up a lot of yards after the catch.
And it was forgotten quickly because of the 39-yard play immediately to Likely on the next play. But it was a bad play. It was a lot of yards left on the field. Ravens scored anyway. It was their first drive. But that doesn't mean that you can go by the results alone, the results that bailed him out alone. It's still bad to give up a sack, even if Lamar on the next play, you know, throws a 21-yard pass to Wallace like he did last week to get you out of it. So anyway, that is what it is. The other very frustrating time in this game was failing to score from first and goal at the two. And they did start with the run. They lost a yard. Then they tried to drop back and took a sack, which was unfortunate. It was also a really bad sack in terms of you know, being opportunities to get rid of the ball there. But it was what it was. And then the third down play was just an awful, dangerous throw to Henry that ended up being dropped, but it wasn't going to get in the end zone no matter what anyway. So it was unfortunately one of Lamar's really bad throws of the game.
Yeah, I think I noticed some people talking about the game plan as well in terms of not having enough designed runs for Jackson. One of the things with that the Bills were working really hard to contain him on those plays. So a lot of those were give looks that he made the right decision on. In the red zone, in the low red zone, I think that's the area to me to get Jackson's legs more involved. And they didn't dial up any of those plays on the short yardage situations in the goal line or the 2-point conversion. Instead, they sort of did.
The roll right play is basically exactly what I want to see on that 2-point conversion. And it basically, it's forcing the defense in one direction. Lamar's perfectly capable of throwing back left if you have a receiver breaking that direction, where many right-handed quarterbacks just can't do that without getting intercepted. And then you still are leaving the option or forcing a defender to make a choice between defending Lamar and defending a receiver.
It is. I think my gripe with that play, I think there was a time earlier in the game where they had a read option with run action that they released to likely down the field, the big play we were just talking about. And I think my gripe, and I've never been a big fan, I'll be honest, of that particular play call in that situation. I think one, it is a little bit predictable. I think you could argue the Ravens got the look they wanted and Mark Andrews couldn't reel in the pass. I also think that is a look that they've gotten a number of times in a number of games and have been able to convert. I think that there have been a number of instances in which it is a tough angle to make that throw and catch. When you're moving, the ground conditions become a factor. I haven't been a fan of that play call, that particular play design in the low red zone for a while. I feel like it happened two or three times in the 2021 season. Different scenario with all the injuries, so I didn't harp on
probably
as much back then. Yeah. I think there was one with Jackson Andrews, but I think the thing that I ultimately come back to is you're splitting the field in half when there isn't that much field to actually work with. And yes, you can have Jackson coming back to the left on most of those plays, especially when they're in big situations like that. He is going to Andrews almost all the way. And they got the look they wanted, which is why I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I've got to get it out there. I've never been a fan of that play call in the low red zone. I think it's predictable. I think you give yourself.
Okay.
Really,
let me give you my reasons why I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. The major reasons are, one, for that flat route, particularly it was run to Andrews, it reduces the chance of a defensive player being between you and the quarterback. Space is created for that direct lane. Remember when Jackson had the incredible run of not getting intercepted anytime in the red zone to start his career? Mm-hmm. All of that is because he throws lasers. He doesn't throw fades. And so every amount of space and every time you move Jackson left or right along the line of scrimmage, you create an opportunity for him to create a throwing lane, which is not really defensible. And then the third reason I like it is because even though what you said is completely true, and I hate it for a quarterback like Flacco to bifurcate the field and, you know, reduce the amount of total space you have, Jackson is the quarterback who can throw back and find Patrick Ricard, who everybody's forgotten about way over on that side of the end zone, or Nelson Aguilar or whoever it is. And we've seen that happen plenty too. So I really love the roll Lamar right. I hate roll Lamar left it just is much more of a chance of that space being meaningfully lost, I think, on a left roll, even though he's as good as any right-handed quarterback moving to his left.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going to run that play, you run it to the right. I think, and this might just be an area where we got to agree to disagree, because I can think of a lot of instances in the past where they've gotten the exact look they wanted, but the actual margins of making that play become really tight in a situation like that. I think the earlier sequence, I think, is a clear area of improvement where they could have run the ball. They could have tried to use Jackson's legs a little bit more in that situation. The 2-point conversion, not my favorite play call, but I can't say it was necessarily the wrong one.
And no issue with the 2-point conversion in either case being run. Analytically, complete, 100% the correct move. I mean, you look at it.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. 1,000%. There's no question.
How are there still so many people out there who think you go for one? Anytime, first of all, anytime after halftime, but really anytime during the game with a reasonable chance to make, because you really have to manufacture something. You really have to believe the Ravens only have like a 20% chance to make that play work in order to make it the wrong play in, say, the third quarter. And maybe it's more like 30%. You have to believe their chances are down. But it's only recency bias that I think can get you there.
Yeah, I think fans will just always outs have the misses loom larger in their mind than the successes. I don't think we think about a ton of the Ravens' successful two-point conversions, but obviously I love bringing up the failed ones. But I think that I think it's also just a sense of there's a somewhat instinctual pushback against some of the numbers that are some of the analytics that support what you're saying. And a lot of people love to just use analytics as a boogeyman and say, oh, well, analytics says that this game isn't played on a spreadsheet. But I think if you just bring it back to good old football terms of this Ravens offense, if you score four touchdowns a game, how many, you know, you're scoring four touchdowns in a game, you have four chances maybe at a two-point conversion. How many times is the defense stopping you when you're trying to gain 2 yards? I think that, to me, you come back to that instead of worrying about win percentage and all the other things that some people that might confuse or scare some people when it comes to this decision. I think you think about it in a lot simpler terms. How many times is the defense going to score this to keep this offense from getting 2 yards when it wants it?
All right, you got to move on. I can't even go through all the analytic rabbit holes you're taking us down with that last statement you made. So I got to move on with this in this thing and really talk about Lamar's game. The Bills did sack him twice, one of which was the awful snap that I think was probably half Linderbaum's fault. And that's the way I've scored it in the offensive line stuff when we get to the second. They generated 9 pressures in the game in total, which wasn't bad at all. They for 27 dropbacks. The Ravens had a lot of ATS, and we'll get to that in just a second. Going to go through very quickly on terms of the numbers they set, and you'll see a pretty clear trend here. When they rushed three, there were 5 plays. Actually, the Bills were rushing three a lot at the end of the game, saving a spy for Lamar off the line of scrimmage and not really trying to rush him with extra men. 5 plays for 31 yards, 6.2 yards per play, 1 sack. 4 plays, and this is where Lamar did his damage. When they rushed 4 men, 10 plays, 171 yards, 17.1 yards per play, obviously. When they rushed 5, now you're going to see the trend, 8 plays, 33 yards, 4.1, 1 sack, and 2 turnovers. So that was pretty awful. 6 plays, 3 plays all incomplete, and 7 plays, 1 play for 5 yards. So this looks like 12 for 38. That's 3.2 yards per play, 1 sack and 2 turnovers with 5-plus rushing the quarterback. So that was the Ravens' Achilles in this game.
Yeah, and it's something we've seen opponents do in the past, even changing what is their MO coming into the game to blitz heavier, which is something the Bills did this year and something the Texans did last year. The Ravens, you know, didn't seem to have the answers. Obviously, 2 of those turnovers came on plays with 5 rushers, although, you know, the one with Andrews losing the ball really doesn't have anything to do with the number of rushers. I think that clearly when Jackson had his time to sit back in the pocket, he was dicing this defense up. And there were some of those plays where he's holding the ball and he's not even running around to buy more time. He's just sitting in the pocket and he was able to find players open downfield.
Yeah, he did a great job of that. Now, let's talk about ample time and space, ball out quick and pressure. 12 ample time and space opportunities, 44%. If you listen to this channel regularly, you know that 28, 29% is probably about normal for a game. So 44 is outstanding. 9 of 11 were complete for 165 net yards, 13.8 yards per play on those. 6 ball out quicks, completed 4 out of 6, but only for 30 yards. It's a little bit below expectation at 5.0 yards per play, but obviously that's a small sample size, not a big concern. And 9 pressure events, 34% of the time. Now, they did have some of the turnovers here, but it was 5 for 8 for 45 net yards. The 5.0 yards per play is fine, but they had some of the really bad plays occur. The sack fumble obviously was off of pressure. They did have ample time and space on the sack minus 5. And then they had the pressure on the fumble by Andrews, which really didn't have anything to do with the pressure. It really had to do with Andrews after the catch only, but a turnover created on that play. Anyway, the Ravens got ran out of 2 pressures here by Lamar as well during the game that affected offensive line scoring, which we'll get to later. But really a very good opportunity set provided.
Yeah, and he delivered. I think that the early pick and that ill-advised throw to Henry on the 3rd and goal situation that we just talked about were the 2 big throws that stood out to me as his big misses of the night. But otherwise, very efficient through the air. Few quarterbacks, I feel the visceral disgust when he turns the ball over, especially when he throws an interception. And he has become so averse to throwing interceptions in a way that I think somewhat negatively affected him a bit earlier in his career. But I think he has turned that into a strength of, I am going to try and find the most open opportunities that I can, and reduced risk that way instead of, you know, being overly careful with the football targeting downfield.
You know, it's weird you say that, because actually Bateman and overthrowing Bateman last year was a big problem for him. He just, it was clear whether consciously or subconsciously did not trust Bateman the way he trusts him this year.
And
let me finish. So he ended up throwing him, trying to throw him open deep in a spot here where he actually did have risk and got intercepted. But he also had a lot of the big plays to Bateman in this game.
Yeah, I think the play to Bateman, I think, was just a clear miscommunication on between quarterback and receiver. It's hard to say, you know, no one's going to come out and say whose specific fault it was, but clearly Jackson thought he was releasing upfield. He said after the game that he didn't look the safety off properly. So to me, that one kind of ultimately falls more on Jackson's shoulders.
Right. I completely in agreement. Let's see. No contested catches the entire game. I might disagree with this to say the tossing the ball up to Henry, which is basically tossing a ball up to a Christian among lions, where it was at the 5-yard line, was pretty much a contested throw. But very fortunately, that didn't end up worse than it did end up. And but no other contested catches is really kind of remarkable for an entire NFL game. 3.38 time to throw was terrific. We already talked about the intended air yards and the completed air yards being very good. I think it went 7 of 10 on third down, reversed one of those, kind of like having the rematch of a big boxing event. They got the first down on fourth down. So really 8 of 10 third downs they faced, they ultimately got a first down on. How do you lose a game like that? We know the answer, but it's a rhetorical question.
There are a bunch of stats like that from this game. I think you could pull out a ton of stats like that. Goes back to what I said at the beginning. Fundamental part of football is holding on to the ball.
All right. Talk a little other schemes. The running back snap division I like to bring up every week. 35 for Henry, 24 for Hill. None for Mitchell. Still a little bit surprised that he didn't get any opportunity, but I guess towards the end of the season, I'm probably getting a little less surprised. He looked pretty good on kickoff returns, I thought, in this game. Was effective. No Pony backfield. And then Henry got carried or targeted on 18 or 35 snaps, and Hill 8 of 24. Ravens have a fairly running back-centric offense, and both of those guys really delivered the mail in this game.
Yep, same as they did against the Bills in the first matchup. The Henry drop looms large, but I think that Hill was effective, surprisingly effective as a ball carrier. I thought he showed some real juice in this game as a ball carrier. One of my personal favorite Ravens in recent memory. Times where it looked like he was going to get tackled, swallowed up by bigger defenders, and kind of powered slash, you know, squeezed his way free and picked up some extra yards. Just a consummate Raven, in my opinion, shows up whenever he's called upon.
Yeah, very excited that he's re-signed. I think that'll be a good move. And you go back to week 4, and he was a big factor against the Bills in that game with a big receiving game. Okay, so we know the Bills played heavy in terms of OL6. The Ravens played very heavy in terms of tight ends plus OL6 plus fullback, which they pretty much always do, but they sometimes have divided out how they do it a little bit differently. So last week against Pittsburgh, 2.39 per play. So it's 2.39 out of your 5 eligible receivers you're using on heavies. It's extraordinarily heavy. I mean, it's higher than the Greg Roman average from 2022, which was the heaviest offense of all time. And then the 2.20 heavies per play in this game is just a small step back from that. Still as heavy probably as virtually any NFL team has run in a game this year that's not the Ravens.
Yeah, and I think we talked about, you know, them not going with 6 offensive linemen earlier, but they still went with the tight end slash Ricard heavy attack, the matchups that they wanted. It's just a staple and will continue to be a staple of this offense. It is an extraordinary numbers and schematic advantage in the first place when you have personnel like the heavy personnel, like especially like Andrews and Likely, who can be so effective in the pass game. Then obviously you introduce Jackson's legs into it, and that's really where the offense takes off. I think it's interesting to note that a couple of the offenses like the Bills and the Ravens, who have a lot more heavy usage, also have quarterbacks that use their legs and really, really optimize all they can get out of the run game.
Yeah. And this is a game where the Bills really got the most they could out of the run game by playing that 6th offensive lineman. And the Ravens were not forced to, largely because they got the personnel changes they wanted. Looking at the individual players, Andrews had 69% of the snaps, Likely 80, used as a blocker very effectively in this game. That probably wasn't his greatest game as a blocker, but Hill had some difficulty We look at the pass blocking tonight. Definitely Henry was not squaring up on his guy as much as I would like. But those guys are on the field for a different purpose. They're often used in pass blocking situations. I don't feel like Henry really gave us a pass blocking year that was up to the quality of the rest of his career, unfortunately. As great as he was this year, and I'm not complaining. Henry was worth 200% of the dollars he was paid. But just unfortunate that as a pass blocker, they couldn't rely on him as much as he'd done for Tennessee in the past.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I felt like that was actually an underrated part of his skill set coming into the Ravens, where a lot of the focus was on his ability as a runner. I felt like he did a pretty good job in Tennessee catching passes and run blocking. And obviously with Hill, you know, and you want to lighten the burden on a guy who has as much tread on his tires, who is, yes, 30. I know how well Derrick Henry takes care of his body, but you're still trying to, you know, make it as easy on him as possible. But then times when, you know, a blitzing linebacker is coming, that the 250-pound guy's got to be able to stand toe-to-toe to him.
All right. The Ravens used a fairly high percentage of set and chip blockers in this game, 13 set and 9 chips. I think they used 6 set and 16 chips last week, really primarily to help Rosengarten. It was primarily chips on that right side. They left Stanley more or less on an island against Highsmith to not great results, but they did a good job protecting Rosengarten, who only had a couple of opportunities directly against Watt in obvious passing situations. And this week they continued a little bit of that, but they really used more set blockers as well. Some of that was in the middle by running backs trying to pick up blitzes. But the Bills did a lot. They blitzed off the slot a lot. They brought Hamlin and they brought Teron Johnson several times on blitzes. And the Ravens did a pretty good job of taking care of that. It wasn't because the ball was out quickly, because that wasn't a high percentage of Jackson's throws.
I think it's the key evolution from Todd Monken from last year. I think when he came in, the kind of offense he installed, the way the Ravens offense was playing, it was clear he really wanted to go to a 5-man protection unit that he could drop back from. And I think he realized towards the end of last year and going into this year that just wasn't as the personnel just wasn't there. The personnel just wasn't quite good enough to have a lockdown 5-man pass protection unit. And so that willingness to give Rosengarten a lot of help was a big reason why Rosengarten looked so good this year. I think we've mentioned that before as well. But I think that's a key thing that Monken has improved on from last year, is kind of being willing to get out of what he really, really would want to be doing ideally. And if you have the extra heavies in there, you know, using them to chip and set block is a good use of them as well, since you're going to have them on the field so much.
Yeah, a lot of times it's a player like Charlie Kolar who is the extra difference between having an offensive lineman in there or having Kolar. Kolar is much harder to scheme for. And he's almost always an inline tight end, but he can run a pattern. And he can certifiably hurt you once in a good long while when he does that. But the Ravens haven't really included him as any part of the offense. I don't think he's had a target since he's gotten back, has he?
I don't think so. He was remarkably efficient as a receiver on a small sample size, but caught almost everything thrown his way. I did some numbers on this a while ago, but his target share when he was running a route was really high, and for exactly the reason that you say, he's tough to scheme for. And when he is on the field, opponents are looking run and he's drawing the easiest matchup typically. So that's something we don't know exactly what the tight end room is going to look like next year, which we might talk about later. But I am, you know, excited for Charlie Kolar's continued development, because I think he really showed that he has added the run blocking heft that the Ravens need from a tight end this year, and still has that pass catching ability he showed in college.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I guess we will call it there. You look at the wide receiver snaps and how this went. Wallace still had a high percentage of snaps. It's the one guy I think is really worth talking about. We get him in the individual section as well, but got 29 snaps, made a huge catch and run on the final drive. Obviously, it was a very big play for the Ravens. He's doing a lot of things from a blocking standpoint the Ravens obviously really love it as part of their run game. Won't necessarily show up with a big green number on PFF or whatever, but they really like what schematically he can do in level 2 and level 3, a lot very similar to, not quite as good, but very similar to what Likely gives them.
Yeah, agreed. And another guy who makes the most of every opportunity he gets as a pass catcher as well, like he showed in this game. I think he's a guy who's certainly an under the radar extension candidate, re-sign candidate right now.
Yeah, I think they've got a good opportunity with him because they only have one guy under the qualified veteran contract status, which is the one where you can pay them basically an extra $1 million and not have it count against the cap. And it creates a great friction for a team favorite player. Wallace will probably be one of those guys next year. The Ravens may not have to go that entire distance with him. They could maybe even save that spot for another player, but he's certainly a guy you give an Anthony Levine offer to at the very minimum, where a couple $100,000 bonus to the vet minimum for a 2-year deal kind of thing would be the absolute minimum. And there may be another team that looks at Wallace's stats like, wait a minute, this guy had, 15 yards per target or whatever it was for this year. Let's see if we can bring him in here. He could well get another offer from another team.
Yep.
All right. Fantastic. Nick, always great talking football with you. Can you tell folks where they can either talk football with you online or where they could read your stuff?
Yeah, so you can find me on X at Nick, N-I-K, knows ball. My writing can be found at Russell Street Report and Baltimore Beatdown, two fantastic outlets. Really excited to put out off-season content with them, as disappointing as the end of the season was.
All right, outstanding. For all the loyal listeners out there, thank you so much for another great year. We really appreciate it. And you guys add to the show tremendously in multiple ways. First of all, any word of mouth is always great, and the show has grown, and we're very happy about that. We'd like to continue doing that. All the old things apply. A five-star, 50-word review, we're very happy to have you do. Show the pod to one other person maybe who hasn't got it, looking for that word of mouth. I'm not algorithm driven, so we're not trying to beat YouTube for additional subscriptions, but like and subscribe there, please, if you will as well. Nick, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks so much, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Percent of business leaders say AI is a top priority. But with AI tools popping up everywhere, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. With over 15 years of experience building responsible, secure AI, Grammarly isn't just another AI communication assistant. It's how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. Designed to fit the needs of business, Grammarly is backed by a user-first privacy policy and industry-leading security credentials. This means you won't have to worry about the safety of your company information. Grammarly also emphasizes responsible AI, so your company can avoid harmful bias. See why 70,000 teams and 30 million people trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise. That's grammarly.com/enterprise. Grammarly, enterprise-ready AI.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.